Boo shows throughout the year, please consider showing your support by making a donation and helping us reach our $75,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but taking a risk on that one game that turns out to be your favorite. Have a good one.
Keep our minds on the game.
All the games.
Games people play now.
Do you think that we could play another game?
Game.
Fun and game.
Game.
Game. You play the game like nobody else.
The game is so fun.
Game.
I never seem to finish all my food. I always get a doggy bag from the waiter, so I just keep what's still unchewed and I take it home, save it for later. But then I deal with fungal rot, bacterial formation, microbes, enzymes, mold and oxidation. I don't care, I've got a secret trick up my sleeve. I never bother with baggies.
Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Queery every third Saturday at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow home.
I'm Mr. KBOO.FM. Them shoulda know it's accurate. Kabaka Pyramid say watch your step, you know what I mean?
This is Joseph Gallivan, producer and presenter of Art Focus, a radio show about visual art in Portland. We are now in KBOO's year-end fundraising campaign called Catalogue of Connections, with an on-air goal of $75,000. I love doing this show because it gives artists a chance to turn their pictures into words. I've met hundreds of artists over the 12 years I have been doing Art Focus, and in that time much of the art coverage has vanished from the local press. Prove I am not a dinosaur by making a donation today. There are three ways. 1. kboo.fm/give. 2. Clicking the red box, Donate, in the mobile app. 3. Text KBOO to 44321. There is a fourth way, mailing a check or even dropping it off at our station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. But that's just for vintage people. The money helps maintain our facilities. Ask your grandparents. KBOO has been a staple in our community for over 56 years. It's a meeting place for revolutionaries and creatives alike. Crazy music, weird art. If a banana duct taped to the wall is worth over $6 million, then surely half an hour of art chat is worth $6. Or $666. Or you can become a sustaining member and never have to think about it again. What Bill Gates called frictionless capitalism in his 1995 book, The Road Ahead. To those who already donate to KBOO, thank you.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Shah Breshgold. She's here talking about Throughline, her show of paintings, which is on now at the Red E Cafe at 1006 North Killingsworth Street in North Portland. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Shah.
Thank you, Joseph, for having me. It's great to see you again.
So we're here, we're in a coffee shop, hence the authentic coffee shop noises in the background, which is a Spotify playlist, banging that coffee thing for the espresso, clanking of plates, so you'll just have to ignore all that. So, Shah, you are a graphic designer by trade, working in print and web, but you're also a painter. You've been a painter a long time. And this show, Throughline, it takes paintings you did in the late 20-teens, kind of straight-up paintings, and then you kind of had an aha moment where you started merging different concepts, and then you started adding text around the edges of some of these earlier paintings to tell a story. Tell us a little bit about that aha moment, and then we'll talk about the first paintings as you go in the coffee shop, which are the early stuff.
In 2020, I had been working on a series of paintings that were dealing with, everybody had cancer. I felt like so many people around me had cancer. And so I was trying to incorporate my feelings around that into the work. I was painting a lot for my garden, beautiful flowers, and nothing was quite gelling to me. I felt like I had finished the childhood series of working from old childhood photos, but I didn't have a next step. And I was a little frustrated with that. And then it was February of 2020, and I was listening to the radio in my car talking about the world shutting down, all these places closing, and when was it going to happen here? And then there was a little brief interview with Tony Fauci, and I was just hit with this, all this memory of the AIDS crisis time. And
so who was Fauci in 2020 and in the 90s and 80s?
Fauci is the head of the, what do they call it now? Then it was the Center for CDC, I guess. Then it was the National Institute of Health. He was the person who really was very involved with the AIDS crisis. And at the beginning, they thought he had dropped the ball. He was the enemy at the beginning. And that actually changed, and he became very involved with the people in ACT UP who were doing a lot of work around trying to get drugs in bodies, trying to deal with people who were really sick right then. And Fauci met with them and learned from them, and they became allies. And at the time, in 2020, I was just like, what do you mean, Fauci? He was the enemy. It just brought back all of these feelings that I had. I was in my mid to late 30s during the 80s, early to mid 90s. And this was my community. I was many people close to me had died or had AIDS at that time. I was a volunteer for Cascade AIDS Project for 3 years. My partner's brother was sick. It was my whole world then.
Where were you then?
I was in Portland working in a restaurant, and there were a lot of gay people that I worked with. We did benefits, events for the community in the restaurant. And so all of that just kind of came back, and I thought, I got to tell these stories. So I started painting. I just started looking up my collection of photos of my friends that had died, people that are still friends, that are still surviving, what was going on for me at the time during these years. So that's kind of the present. So going back to this painting that we're talking about, which is called Who by Fire, it has kind of the dividing cell image on it, which I had been working with at that time. So this was from 2020. I guess I started it, finished it in 2021. It had the dividing cell of cancer that I was thinking about. It has an empty chair, which was, you know, kind of a symbol of the loss of the people from cancer and also the people from AIDS that I had lost.
So it's a kind of mint green background with an orange metal chair. There's an orange flower on the left, very in the foreground. It's all kind of abstract. You know, the background is large square brush strokes of blue and green and yellow. The dividing cancer cell is like a figure of eight shaped with white dots and a black background. It's also orange, and that's kind of floating in the center left. Just tell us, what is the chair, what is the flower, and what are the other colors you use?
You know, a lot of the shapes, I don't think about them as having particular meaning. The chair is definitely just the idea of the empty chair, of loss, and who isn't there anymore. The dividing cells was similar, you know, it was the cancer cell, but it was also HIV. The flowers, for me, are always in work that I do about life and what's positive in life and growth and healing and those kind of things.
So why the Leonard Cohen title, Who by Fire?
It's about people dying in all different ways. Also that grief is love. I read somewhere recently, I believe that.
Say that again?
Grief is love. That when you're grieving for someone, it's about love. And Who by Fire to me is always, I've associated that with love and loss.
You had a kind of stylistic change. If we go over to the couch side of the coffee shop, there's a piece here called, there's three. One is like a Buddha on a doorstep, Buddha statue, surrounded by potted plants. And the one on the right is a sort of staircase or
A bridge,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the middle one is a lot more abstract. It's called Paper Doll, and you made it in 2022. And it is a kind of mixture of yellows and browns and blues, almost sort of random shapes. I can't make out a landscape. Or maybe there are mountains at the top. There's maybe a person with legs and a trunk and a hat. What was your approach with this paper doll?
I started out, the things at the top, the mountains, that they were originally like a kind of paper doll cutout shape, like when you fold paper and cut a doll and then open it up. So that was where that started. While I can look at these pieces and think that they're beautiful and lovely, I need a story for me as an artist to really be engaged in what I'm doing.
Was there a story with a paper doll?
There was probably a story with the paper doll that I don't really remember now. These pieces were more about struggling to find something. And also, I love the process of painting. I just love, so sometimes it's just a great release and how I like to spend time. These are more about just like how much I love my garden.
How long would it take you to do one of these acrylic on wood panel? They're probably like two feet by 1 foot.
Yeah, they probably take 4, 5, 6 hours.
But you're not like sanding off the paint and doing 17 layers.
No, I'm not. I tend to work pretty fast.
So your job is laying out things for other people. They tell you what they want, you do what they want. And you also do commissions, so you'll paint. Someone gives you a photo of their cat, you'll do a nice painting of their cat. But when you paint these, is this just for you?
This is just for me. I never think about that I'm going to sell it. Yes, I do commissions, and I love when people love my work and want to buy it, but it's really always for me first.
Is it therapeutic? Do you decorate your house? Do you give them away? Where do they end up?
Yeah, I give things away. I'm giving away a lot these days.
Where do you get your supplies?
Various places. I go to Blick. I go to Artists and Craftsmen because it's right in my neighborhood, which I love, having an art supply store really close by.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Shah Breshgold. Her show Throughline is on now through December the 12th, at the Red E Cafe on North Killingsworth Street. Charles, let's go and look at some of the more narrative paintings. So you would take your old family photos, which are prints in old albums, you know, from the 70s and that, and just sort of redo them as paintings. So you've got a couple here in the middle of the room. One is just called Life Jacket, which is very kind of abstract. It's an orange life jacket on a blue background, which is probably water, with a brown background above that and a white shape. And then next to it is a woman with a little kid, and they're sitting on red and blue chairs outside a White House reading a newspaper. So what was the story with these, and why were you compelled to paint them?
Well, Life Jacket was one that I was actually taking a painting class up at what was OCAC. We were doing a collage in class. We started out doing collage and then did a painting from the collage. And I had already started on this series working with some old family photos, and I knew I wanted to do something with the life jacket because it was very, my dad fished, and we used to go out in boats in the when I was a kid, and he would always say we'd have to put our life jackets on while we were going out. Once we're in the middle of the lake, we could take them off, which is totally, and I am not a swimmer, and so it was not very smart, Dad, mm-hmm. right? I also used to drink a lot of beer while we were in the boat.
Was this back in the days when you didn't have to wear a seatbelt and you could yes. drink a cocktail on the freeway?
Yes, definitely. So I did a collage with just a lot of found, you know, papers that were there, and then did this painting of the collage. I teach collage also, and I always tell my students that that's a great, if you're stuck, and if you're painting, like a lot of times if I'm stuck, I'll do a collage and then paint from the collage to, you know, just kind of get me into a different place. So yes, it is much more abstract than the other pieces at this time, but I felt like it really goes with it because it is that, it's a life jacket of the era. The other one is actually of my mom. So that was taken before I was born. That's an older cousin that she's sitting with. I think the title is Family Tradition. I learned to read, my sister taught me to read with the comics from the newspaper. That's what my mom is reading to this cousin, her nephew. It's a beautiful image of her. This was before she had kids. I just think it's a really, she's very maternal in that photo mm-hmm. toward him. You know, she was one of those women that didn't, I mean, she always worked, but she said, if it was a different time, I would have been a teacher. That was something that she was interested in, so.
It's just a kind of fond picture. There's no mm-hmm. tragic subtext here.
No, not that, no. It's complicated. In my relationship with my mother, but I think is a very sweet image. I think it was taken at a lake cottage. We did cottage. I grew up in Michigan, and that was a big thing to go stay in a cottage on a lake in the summer for, you know, a little vacation. And I think that's where they were.
Mm-hmm. So Shah, in the area where there are like red benches opposite the coffee counter, you've got some of your hybrids. Paintings, which are some of the old paintings based on family photos, and then you've scanned them and printed them in color, but you've added a lot of text, big slabs of text, like hundreds of words. For example, the time they went to a funeral, so kind of a beautiful reminiscence. The picture is just a woman in a red dress with a little girl in a flower dress next to her, but the text is all about 4-year-old's impression of the parents getting dressed up for a funeral. Why are they wearing their good clothes? What's a funeral? What's death? She goes out in the garden, looks at the cat, goes on the swing. It's like extreme innocence, and you sort of captured it perfectly. And I was wondering how do you have such total recall? And two, how do you decide how much text to put on one of these paintings?
Yes, thank you. In terms of the recall, I don't know. I just do. There are certain scenes that feel like scenes in my mind that I remember things very clearly. I think it was the first memory of death and what that meant, and somebody that came to me, and it was very, I was a sort of an anxious kid anyway, but that was very clear, has always been very clear to me. So the writing happened separately, and I've been working on memoir. This idea came up to me and I wrote about it, and then I thought, oh, it would be great to have it with some imagery behind it. So I had that painting and started playing around with it. And I did a little bit of editing to make it fit.
Editing the painting or editing, the writing?
Sorry, editing the writing so that it would have these sections. So the painting could still be seen very clearly, but the text is on top of it. So when I started working on the AIDS-related pieces and writing those stories and painting those stories, at first I thought, oh, this is going to be a show in a gallery. And then I thought, well, nobody's going to stand in a gallery. Nobody wants to stand in a gallery and read a lot. So that has kind of transformed more into a book printed. That's the concept of that now. But these pieces, I feel like, because they didn't have a huge amount of text, that maybe somebody, it would be fun to see them on the wall and printed. This is something that I have had a few of these published in a journal, so it is in something that somebody can open a book and read. I feel like they just went together so well, that the illustration helped the story and the story helped the painting have more meaning.
Mm-hmm. It's an archival digital print. Like, yes. What does that mean, and where did you get it done?
So it's on, everything is acid, like the paper is acid free. It'll last like 100 years, you know, more. They're digitally created. The ink is archival ink. And it looks like the painting. I mean, because I have this painting hanging in my house, the original. And I mean, I look at this and I think it looks exactly like the painting. Mm-hmm. I go to a place called Photo to Canvas, I think, or something like that, on Lombard, right near my house. Worked with Jared, who is the owner, great guy, and he will photograph work if you need it, photographed, and then will print. And yeah, so I was really happy with how those look.
There's another one next to it. Yes. It's a similar idea, Diane Whitaker Facts. Mm-hmm. I love this one because the story, there's a woman in a pink dress with a big white handbag with her arm around you. It says me, age 7, and you're in a little orange dress with white socks and sneakers. And then the whole, it looked like you're standing in a street, actually, but there's sort of trees. Can't really tell, but the whole story is about you had an imaginary friend with this sort of slightly grand name, Diane, with an E, Whitaker. And you were persistent. You had her from a very young age till you were in third grade. Mm-hmm. And you just insisted on her and could describe her. And your sister even put up with you, basically.
Yes. I mean, the thing that's interesting to me about Diane Whitaker, and well, people are always comment on that it's so funny that she had a first name and a last name. And my family was totally on board with, they acted like it was perfectly normal. Nobody ever made fun of me around it or that thought it was weird. And because I have an older brother and an older sister, I have been lucky to have them as memories of things that I don't remember. Like, they remembered some details. Mm-hmm. I was in a writing class, and the prompt was to write something about a non-human being that you have a connection with. And so the examples were like animals, and I thought, what am I going to write about? You know, I don't know. And then
You don't have a cat?
I do not have a cat. I have a very large dog. But I thought, well, Diane Whitaker, she's perfect. And so the teacher in the class said, somebody would publish this, you know, you need to write a, you know, some kind of short book, chapbook. And I said, this is really all I have. So that was
the best paragraph is in the bottom right corner.
Yes.
black and white picture of a sort of cute woman in a t-shirt. Mm. I think she's a painter too. And it says, I fell in love when I was 23 with a girl that looked like Diane Whittaker. Even my sister thought so, and as an arrow. So I'm assuming that's the girl you fell in love with, yes, rather than that's you.
It is the girl I fell in love with. That she had dark hair and the bangs and hair and that short hair, like chin length hair. And that was what Diane Whittaker looked like.
Is this subconscious at 23?
Yeah. I fell in love and then
years later,
just history. Yeah.
And then finally, there is, well, there's two together, Capitol Hill 1988 and This Is What It Was Like in 1990. It looks like you, a self-portrait with short hair and a kind of boxy white shirt. Oh, it's you getting ready to go to a memorial service. So this was somebody who died of AIDS.
Yes.
And it's this reaction to smells and a sign. And, you know, you're all kind of thrown out of whack by this, going to this memorial. And then next to it is another piece with a lot of text around it. And it's a guy, a young man on a bicycle, you know, in his bike shorts and backpack with a helmet. He was Kirk Davis, who died in 1992. And you list all these people around the edge who died of AIDS and what it was like. It was your people, but they were dying. These are a bit more painterly and a bit more sort of, look more like pages in a book. So what was the idea of these ones?
Well, originally they were created just as paintings. And then when I started to write stories to go with them. And so then I brought the paintings, photographed them, and brought them into InDesign, the page layout program that I work in, and started putting text around the paintings. And as I said before, at first I thought, oh, they, you know, when this project, like, it would be in a gallery, big paintings with some text. And now it does seem more like a book that I am working on. And I have about, oh, I don't know, I think 40 paintings and probably that many stories, but some paintings don't have stories yet, some stories don't have paintings yet. So it's in process. It's a story that seems very important to tell. And I have heard that from a lot of people. I've heard it from younger people who, I was around a couple young cousins there in their 30s recently, and one of them didn't know about the AIDS quilt. I was surprised and then realized that there are a lot of people now who don't know that history. Mm-hmm. And also for us, for the people, for the survivors and, you know, my people that lived through it, as caregivers, we need the story to be told also. And recently when I was in a critique group in with writers, and somebody told me that they read about 10 pages of this project, and he said that he'd heard a lot of, you know, read a lot about that time period, but not about Portland. And he was really happy that I was writing about what it was like in Portland at that time, because there are a lot of stories about San Francisco and LA and New York, and so it's a little different. It's different here. Mm-hmm. When I had the opportunity to have the show, I wasn't sure I really wanted to have a show, or I didn't have an intention, because I had been working more on thinking in terms of a book and not showing things in a gallery. But having all this work kind of, and that's why I called it Throughline, like seeing where these ideas started and where they came from and how they've ended up and where they're going forward to felt really important to me. And it's been really great for me just to see all this work up together.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was painter Shah Reshgold. Her show Throughline is on now at Red E Cafe at 1006 North Killingsworth Street. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Shah.
Thank you so much, Joseph. It's been great.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Have him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Let the rhythm. Let the and let the rhythm just.
Hi, that song you can hear in the background is Let the Rhythm Just by the Polish Ambassador. This is Joseph. If you would like to go see the Polish Ambassador on New Year's Eve at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom, answer this trivia question and email me to win a pair of tickets. The question is, in Salvador Dali's painting Burning Something and Telephones, what is the something? What is burning in the background? Okay, if you know without Googling it, email me, josephgalavan@gmail.com, and I will use a randomizer to pick one of the winning entries, and you'll win a pair of tickets to see the Polish Ambassador at McMenamin's Crystal Ballroom this New Year's Eve. Thanks.
Estás escuchando a KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath en el 104.3 FM y K220HR Hood River en el 91.9 FM.